Recording. Okay.
Self, I think, is how we titled the event. I've never had to say it out loud. This is fun. Where we're going to practice doing a form of watercolor painting that is fairly accessible as well as beginner friendly. I'm Naomi Levine. I'm a grad student over in the Communication Studies department. I do the best I can to be good at communicating, but a PhD does not equal good at communicating. I started doing watercolor painting back in 2016. It was something that I took on well in the theme of this week's events of Mental Health Awareness Week, that is fantastic to have multiple weeks out of the year. I took it as not only a way of self-expression, but also as a form of escape. I got into doing watercolor painting as a way to add color to making little comics that just helped me understand my own thoughts in a better way. It was a fun way of journaling. This evening, what we're going to be working with are a few different types of materials. We have the main one that you've all had in your packets are these little tablets. If anybody's ever tried to dye eggs at any time of the year, that looks like these, but that's not what it is. It's a type of watercolor tablet, and it'll dissolve in water. In a few minutes, I'll give everybody a moment to go fill up their little cups with water if they haven't done so already. And once dissolved, they form a fairly decent watercolor to work with that's really nice and really accessible. The other parts that we're working with that are similar materials that you'll recognize, and I apologize if the camera's going in and out of focus. I'm working with an older phone as my second camera. but is this a couple pieces of what looks like note cards that are blank postcards, and it's on a watercolor paper, a little bit closer to a mixed media style paper, but it'll handle water really well. Then you'll notice we have these six cups for your six paints. And in addition to that, if you have one available, I just have this tiny little jar that I put water in, just some clean water right from the tap, and that'll make it easy to clean off the brushes. You also have two paint brushes. They look different than mine. I wasn't able to get a hold of the exact same brushes. I try to keep as much symmetry as I can, but not always successful with these virtual events, but you have two brushes of two different sizes. I'm working with an 8 and a 10. And if I recall correctly, you are all working with a 3 and a 6. And these brushes will be great for working with different types of lettering, which I'll get into as we do techniques later on in the video. I guess it's not a video, it's just me recording live. and then also something useful is either a paper towel or just a cloth that you don't mind using for the evening. These types of watercolor paints will wash out of fabrics really easily, so you don't have to worry too much about staining. Even with some of the darker colors, it washes out really nicely. So at this time, what I'm going to suggest is if you take your little cups and go to whatever sink is nearby, and I don't know if I can show this very well, but I filled these about halfway with water. So not the entire cup full, just kind of eyeballing about half, not a whole lot of precision necessary. And then once you fill them all up, we'll drop one color per cup. All right, I'll give everybody a few minutes to go do that before I continue the instruction.
Were we supposed to have like multiple cups? Yeah. Like in the bag, I only had one cup.
You were supposed to have six cups.
Or is it six? No, it's just one.
Did anybody else get only one cup?
Interesting.
Okay. Maybe if you have other paper cups or maybe like little bowls or like a paint palette at home, they should all just work just fine.
Yeah. Otherwise, pick your favorite color. And somebody got no cup. Oh my goodness.
Sorry about the cup problem.
Huh.
I guess we have 300 cups at the center now.
Oh my. Just 300 very tiny cups.
Sorry about that, guys.
Well, it seems like the So the average assessment here is that there's at least one cup. So we'll do stuff with one color. Someday we will have a party with tiny cups. It'll be great. Not on the job, Patrick. Not on the job.
For those of you that are just joining, we just started. People are filling water halfway full in these tiny cups with each of your paints.
Yes. Or if you have only one cup, you will just choose one color. The darkest of the tabs is purple, and the lighter one that looks kind of purple is red. And I think the other ones are a little bit more explanatory of which color they are. But if you have a question, feel free to hold a tablet up to your thing and I will do my best to tell you what color it is. All right. Looks like some of the folks who left to get water are back now. So if you have only one cup, pick the color that you think will be the coolest, and I will do my best to adapt to single color paintings here, but also showing kind of the range of them since I presume you have all six tablets. So here's what I'm going to start with, is I'm going to start with just swatching all of our colors so that you can see kind of the range of them. The reason that we have this order is I know it'll take about 6 minutes for each of those tablets to dissolve. So while you're waiting on your color to dissolve, you can just watch and see what I got going on. And I won't start any of the more formal instruction stuff until your paint's ready. So starting over here in this little cup, what I have is I've just dipped my brush in and I'm kind of swooshing it up and down to get some color going. And I'm working with the largest of my brushes at the moment. And then with just a swipe onto the page, we can see that we have a kind of pinky, purpley sort of red tone here. And then after that, I'm going to clean off my brush so as to not cross-contaminate my colors for now. Moving on to my next color, we can see what the orange looks like. And the nice thing about this particular form of watercolor is rather than working with a dry pan or a tube, we're working with just already wet medium, which makes it a little bit easier to work with for spreading it around. And not as much need to have to worry about how much water control you're dealing with. It's just a more sort of consistent setup. It just is wet. So there we have our orange. It's kind of a bit on the lighter side, but there are ways that we can darken it up, which we can go over in just a moment. If we get more to what the true yellow of the pack is, it's a little bit similar to our orange. But one way that we can deal with that, and it might be hard to see here in the camera, but hopefully you'll be able to see it on your end a bit better. So it's a very light kind of lemony yellow. And if you wanted to make your orange a bit more of an orange color, a more kind of true orange color, while it's still wet, if you go back to your red color and you dip it in just a little bit and then put it on top of that still wet orange, and you can just kind of scrub it lightly together. Whenever I'm applying these colors, I'm not pushing too hard down on the bristles. There's different ways you can do that. So if I wanted to push down really hard, it would look, you know, a lot like this. You'd be pushing down firmly. But if you want to retain more of kind of the tip of your brush, then you just kind of are lightly touching with just the tip of the brush. And that adds a little bit more color to it. With these ones, you're working with some really light washes. So you're not going to get sort of really overly deep colors, but you're going to get some light colors. And let's look at what our green looks like now. At least in the cup, it reminds me of various sport drinks from my childhood. And it probably has the same nutritional value. But on the page, it's just a really nice light green. Which again, I'm sorry with my lighting, that's not the easiest to see coming through the camera. But color-wise, we've got this nice kind of almost highlighter yellow style green going on here, closer to a highlighter yellow. And then there's that orange that I mixed with a little bit of our pinky red to give us a bit of a deeper orange. And then our final two colors that we have with us today are blue. Oh, I like that blue. That's a nice blue. And purple. Ooh, that is a vivid purple. That's nice. All right. And so far what I've done here is I've done what's called a wet on dry technique, which means that my paper is dry and the medium that I'm using, the paint in this case, is wet. Another really fantastic way to work with watercolor, and also why I built in this demonstration time, is because I have tons of this paper and so I can make all the mistakes so you don't have to. But another way you can do this, which I think is really nice for if you want to do on the on the paper blending to get a kind of more tie-dye aesthetic, which has been really fashionable lately, and I'm personally here for it, is you would take your brush over here in your clean water, and you just sort of get as much water on your brush as you can, and then just spread the clean water onto the paper to make the paper wet. And I like to just get a lot of water on there. Just really go for it and kind of scrub at it. And then you can take kind of whatever colors you like. This is how, if you've seen those nice gradients that people have painted, this is how you achieve those. So I'm going to do a red to yellow gradient for demonstration. So on the wet part here, the way that it's going to flow, so I'm going to start with the red there. I'm going to get into my orange and then work it up into the red, work the red back into the orange a bit. And then we'll get the yellow down here at the bottom of my wet spot. And we'll work that back up into the orange. And that's a really nice sort of clean way to make a gradient. Because you've already got a wet surface, you just kind of let things flow around in the water. Try and lift that up a bit. Hopefully it'll be a little easier to see them moving together. And of course, because you're working with water on a flat surface, it wants to just keep moving around. And if you get too much water on there, what you can do is you can dry off your brush lightly on your paper towel or whatever, and then you can just pick up some of the water. And just sort of dab it around. And that is one way to get a gradient, by doing wet on wet techniques. So we made the paper wet, we worked with a wet medium, and that works really well for just getting all over color in that way. So wet on wet is kind of one of my favorite ways to work with watercolor. It's a nice way to cover a large area and give you a lot of interesting texture to it. The other interesting ways that we can work with it is, if anybody's familiar with brush lettering, I am a little bit okay with brush lettering. But that's a really nice effect that you can do on postcards, is you can do a bit of brush lettering to do some really intricate calligraphy work. So if we work with, I suggest a dry on wet technique for doing brush lettering so that you don't have so much of the water just sort of puddling out. Let's work with this purple color because it seems as though it maybe shows up the best from my view to yours. And say you wanted to, I don't know, what's a good word? Somebody throw out a short word. Don't leave me hanging.
When you say short words, all I can think of are long words.
Dang it. That's fair. All right. I could have seen that one coming. All right. How about we go for word fun? Fun is a short word.
Fun is a short word.
Does somebody have a better short word?
Short word for?
Just a short word in general. Any short word.
Oh, man. This is tough.
Right?
Not play not word word builder kind of thing. Okay, it's really easy when you're playing Scrabble, I guess, and you're limited to seven letters.
I think fun.
That's fair.
Yeah,
we'll go with fun. All right, so we'll go with fun. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you all on the spot. Now you all know how your undergrads feel. So let's start with fun, because that's what we're aiming for. All right, so it's going to look sideways for you, and I'll rotate it because I'm sort of, I would show you my setup, but then I'd have to bring, oh, the word joy, that's also, okay, let's modify this to be a J because I can. All right, so here's a good way to do a J, starting, if you've already started an F for fun and you think joy is a better word, and in this case it is. So we've got our line, now we're going to make the bowl connecting in. And this is the magic of watercolor, is that it's entirely water. You just keep adding water. Hopefully you stop before you put a hole in your paper, but at the very least, you just kind of keep blending. And eventually it'll all kind of pool around. This is the limits of my assessment on anything that could be fluid dynamics related. If anybody knows it better than me, please do a presentation on it. And that's kind of the start of our J. See? And if you want it to be a really nice looking capital J, let me put another line across the top. I'm going to take a bit of our clean water since things have started to kind of dry. And that's what's also great about watercolors. You can reactivate it a bit with more water. And then it'll just flow some more. I will mention this type of watercolor. Some of you may have heard of when you're doing color grading a light fastness. This type of watercolor is non-archival, so it's not going to be incredibly light fast. So if you know when you're done, you're like, I don't want to send this postcard off, it's too gorgeous. If you do choose to either frame it or hang it, do not hang it in direct view of a window. Otherwise, it will get sun bleached very easily. So we got a J for our joy. Now let's get an O. O's are tricky because you got to draw a circle, and you got to draw a circle with hair. And I don't know if you've ever tried to draw a circle with hair, but it's hard. So we're going to try for a nice kind of more elongated O and go for that oval shape. And I just kind of start at the top, making that curve that I want so I know where I want my sides to meet up. And I bring it down. And you'll see something that I like to do with my watercolor is I work in layers. And so I make these really light layers as though I'm sketching with the brush. And that's how I avoid having to sketch as much with a pencil, is by doing most of my sketching with a really, really light wash. And then going back through and adding in more color. It just makes the process a lot smoother. It means that I don't have to worry about stray pencil strokes underneath the watercolor, because if you write with pencil and then you put watercolor on top of it, it's really hard to erase the pencil afterwards. I've made that mistake a few times. Hopefully my mistake can help you out. But so we've got an O going. We're building up the color on it. We've got the O here. Now there's a lot of stylistic choices you can make with a Y. And this is where you got to make your own decisions. But also, before we start that Y, first I'm going to finish touching the O, you'll notice that I don't just write it out like I'm working with a pen. You're basically blocking in shapes. And that's something that's really important with doing brush lettering. There are some absolutely gorgeous brush lettering techniques out there by people who are very good at this. I had an undergrad student who was a competitive brush lettering person, and his brush lettering was gorgeous. So if you wanted a more formal tutorial in brush lettering, we got to find that kid because he was good at it. But absent of that, we're going to look at how I do a Y. And I'm going to build my Y with just a tiny floating V on a stick. I could go for a more curvy Y, make it nice and cursive-y. But let me, after I finish up this Y, I'll explain what's something really cool that you could do with this. So you've got the word joy here. On its own, pretty cool. If you sent this to, you know, a friend or a loved one, or, you know, even a frenemy who you just wanted to rub in some of your personal joy with, by sending them a postcard. Once these letters dry, here's where supplies that you likely have around your house can come into play. My favorite is just pens. Any pen will do. This one's a jelly roll. Weirdly enough, I don't think that jelly rolls are as good as everybody says they are. Unpopular opinion, maybe. This one just doesn't flow very well. But once this dries, which for this watercolor and the amount of water that's on there should take just a couple of minutes, what you can do then is you can do a really nice elongated cursive over the top of it. And then it'll look like you've done block letters underneath with a really nice cursive on top. Let me show you an example that I have for that. This one I didn't do with watercolor, but at the very least, it'll give you an idea of what the concept looks like. All right, so this is my tiny planner. There's nothing highly personal in here, so don't worry about it. But here I wrote in block letters week 6, and then on top in a nice cursive where I spread out the letters so that it was on top of the large blocks, the word week, and then I did a 6 on top of it. And that's a really nice way to just add a really simple flair to something without having to get really artsy with it. It's very simple, which is something that I really like. You can also run bun. Yes. Something else that I've seen folks do that I don't have enough knowledge in this way of doing is I've seen folks do like dual languages on top of each other. So they'll do the brush lettering underneath in one language, and then in a different language, they'll basically translate the word to whomever they're sending it to. Or they'll, if it's like their native language to somebody else's native language, and then they'll have those two words on top of each other. That's another really fun way to do this. It also works really well if you are strategic and if you have like, say you wanted to use the word joy and in a different language that you know, the word joy happens to be longer, then you could put the tinier script written over the top of it, the word joy in the longer language. That would look really lovely. And essentially that's the secret to a very expensive Hallmark card is that and a scanner. Because once you scan something, the scanned image is light fast. You're good to go there. You don't got to worry about using cheap supplies if you got a scanner. I do not have a scanner. But if I were making Hallmark cards, I would get a scanner. So those are some of kind of the major techniques there. Other interesting things that you can do with other supplies that you may just have laying around your home to sort of embellish these kinds of things, or even I have this card here that I just did all these swatches on from earlier, is you can take something like a white gel pen. You've got the black gel pen. I like to also sometimes just do things with pencil on top. Just take any kind of pencil and just drawing on top of it. I like the texture of it, especially when you're working with watercolor paper, because it's a more textured kind of paper. Gives a really cute character. Now, if you are going to send this through the mail, probably don't do pencil, because it'll smudge. Another thing you can do is if you wanted to draw something first and do watercolor over the top of it, you could get a more water-resistant pen. So this one is the, of course, it's going to be difficult to show, and I am not a beauty guru from YouTube, but it's the Uniball Air. This pen, pretty easy to get. It's a little on the pricier end for ballpoint pens. But if you were to be interested in doing watercolor over the top of already drawn illustrations, this would be a nice pen to have, as well as the Pigma Micron. My advice in doing those is to just make sure that you leave your drawing set aside for a while after you've done the actual ink drawing to make sure that the ink is completely dried. And then another supply that I really like to use myself are just color pencils. These ones happen to be water soluble, but really any color pencil works. Once you've done something on the page here in your watercolor, you can use the color pencil over the top to add some shadow to it. Or, for instance, say you just wanted to swatch all your colors, but you don't want to waste it. You could say take like on this yellow square here, you could take a kind of darker yellow color pencil. And something I really like to do is you just take something and you're like, what's yellow? And because it's been on my mind lately, the sun is generally conceived of as yellow-ish. You could just start drawing a little sunshine. And then it's sort of in those complementing sort of things because they're both yellow, but one's a darker yellow and one's a lighter yellow. It's just a little simple square with a shape on it. So adding in those kinds of symbols is a really fun thing that some folks like to do with these kinds of things. Similarly with gradients, another one that I suggest, and I think it was actually also one that was on the poster, is creating an entire gradient on the card, letting it dry, and then using that as your skyline, and then doing in a black pen over the top of it a silhouette of a house and a car and some trees. That's a really classic approach. But these are a lot of really easy ways to work with watercolor. I think a lot of folks get intimidated by watercolor because it just seems like it's a lot to get into. But as far as a medium goes, even if you wanted to get something that was more expensive or of a different type than like these tablet paints, if you wanted to get tubes, the tube itself for your first watercolor can be a little on the pricier end depending on the tube you buy. But that tube will last you a while because it really doesn't take a lot of paint to create an illustration, even if you're only working in one color the entire time. So those are a lot of tips to throw at everybody all at once. The way I usually do these events is it's sort of a, I give you the tools for how you might use these things. And in this case, we physically gave you the tools as well. And then I just sort of turn you loose and see what you come up with. So anybody who's done these events with me before knows that about me. Anybody who's new, welcome. but are there any questions about watercolor or any questions about ways of working with it that I didn't cover or you'd like me to cover again? Huh? Fantastic. Well, then what I'm going to do with the rest of our time together is I'm going to get started on a postcard that I'd like to make to send to my mom. And y'all can watch me. You can watch your own page. You can ask questions about anything you like or just chat in general. And we'll do the best we can to simulate being in a real room. The same room. We are all in real rooms right now. But not the real same room.
I always think of like adding music, but then the music never like jams with the way like the rate everybody's painting. So
that's fair. I know in previous craft nights that we've done, I've just sort of rambled for the last hour, and I don't know how entertaining that is for everybody. If everybody wants, I can just ramble. There are a lot of things that I could just talk about with nobody responding. I grew up as an only child, and I've noticed that's a common skill that only children sometimes develop, is talking to themselves.
I actually love that. That's kind of like listening to podcasts. You know, I love it.
Oh, fantastic. Any topic requests to get me started? It's like an improv show here.
I don't know. Well, we could talk about your undergrad students. I don't know, like some of you were talking about how undergrad students are like, that's always a fun topic to talk about, you know, like fun students. Well, I don't know.
I could certainly talk about some of the classes that I've taught. I know we are recording, so I won't say anything in, like socially incriminating, I guess. Yeah. I've never done anything criminal. To throw that one out there. Three-letter words and topic for the podcast. Yes, thank you, Patrick. So let's see. I am in the comm department right now, and so I have taught comm 114, which is a bit infamous among undergrad students. I noticed that a lot of engineering students either have a strongly positive opinion coming into the class because they just enjoy the performance aspect of it, or they hate it because it's literally them taking a class that's anything but engineering. Which, you know, fair, I get it. How many students? Oh, goodness. In 114, you'll have up to 24 students. I also have taught Comm 102, in which I'll have about 60 students a semester. And then this semester, I'm teaching Comm 204, which is a more specific class for people entering communication studies as an undergrad discipline, and I have about 70 students just that are assigned to me out of a large lecture class of about 140 students. And they've all been really different teaching experiences between all three of those classes. Prior to this program, in my master's program, it wasn't common to get to teach, but I did manage to somehow get myself into a TA position with some folks in my department. And I did a really different teaching experience where half of my students were from a community organization. And my campus students had to commute to the location where we taught the class once a week. And I think for that class, it was a lot smaller. And I think we had about 12 students, maybe 16. Students, it was a really small class because it was a really specialized course. So yeah, I guess I've had rooms full of anywhere from 16 to 7. Well, you don't usually see all 70 at the same time, but yeah, quite a lot of students to work with. Something I have yet to figure out with teaching is what the obsession with time is on submissions. From like a just a teaching perspective, I'd rather my students have the time to actually engage with the material in a headspace that they can work within. And while I know there's the ultimate deadline of the end of the semester, I feel like punitive measures with micro deadlines has has its function, but I've noticed that whenever I subtract that away from my teaching experience, my students excel a lot more, and they're able to engage with the material more on a professional level, which is usually what I'm hoping for, especially if they're gonna come into the major and possibly one day, you know, walk the halls as a grad student. I'd like them to be prepared to have that kind of conversation. And so I just feel like putting time limits on things doesn't always help that. Yeah. Let's see. There's some ramblings about my teachings. Let's see. I don't want to turn this into a teaching pedagogy podcast because then it would just be my English class from last semester that I took as one of my out of department classes. And that would not be fun, especially while trying to paint. What other kinds of hobbies or crafts do other folks like to do? Are there any particular activities you like engaging in that you want to share?
I knit.
Really?
It's really calming for my brain. It makes my brain slow a little bit. That's really nice. Sometimes my thoughts are really, really fast and just go crazy. But then like my focus comes a little bit divided, and that's really nice.
Yeah. What kinds of things do you like to knit?
Everything. I really like to challenge it because you know how you can do a lot of things with crochet because it curls, but I like to do it with knitting because it's more challenging. So,
yeah.
But the thing is that I do everything for others because I always think that just so much of my soul and time in this, I shouldn't have it for myself. I should give it to others. I'm not good enough for my work.
Oh my. Well, it's nice though to be able to give things to other people. I do that a lot with my paintings. Also, I run out of wall space to look at my own stuff. I'd feel probably similar, I think, if I did more knitting. I've only got so much neck to hold a scarf, right?
Right?
Yeah. And kind of on the opposite then end of the spectrum, because you were saying that it helps you slow down because knitting is a bit of a slower process. I see somebody in the chat here mentions that they like badminton, which is very fast. Oh, my. Oh, yeah. Hey, another badminton player too. Oh, fantastic. Yeah, no, badminton's also quite fun. I like the I like to have both slow and fast activities. Watercolor is my slower activity because I have to wait for water to dry. But man, a fast activities that I do. Lately it's mostly just playing Zelda, which unless you're in a dungeon can be quite slow. But once you enter a dungeon in that game, it goes by fast. Oh. Yep. Zelda Hyrule. That's a good one. Yeah. Oh, that'd be really fun on the base. How long have you been playing the bass, Patrick?
I'd say started with the guitar, so 8 years.
Wow, fantastic. Did you get into it as like part of a class or just out of curiosity?
Oh, just personal interest, I guess. Still need to find a music group, so.
Oh, that's great. You could do, my partner could not find, at least he did not think I was sufficiently keeping up with the banter of the songs he was playing on ukulele. So he just built a robot to be his singing partner, which I think is more hilarious. And it means then that I don't have to memorize lyrics. So that makes me happy. And now we just have a tiny robot made out of a Soylent box who lives in our basement and is there for comedy purposes.
Well, you can always make it a trio and join with them.
That's true. That would go back on the solving of my problem of not wanting to have to memorize lyrics. But We'll keep that idea between all of us and not tell my partner. Any other folks play instruments? I want to join Patrick's band. Yeah, quick question.
So how do you think we can make these colors a little bit bolder? I know you explained earlier like how we can like go over them again and all. So I was thinking maybe I added like too much water. So maybe if I just I was thinking like if I heat it up, so I will evaporate the water.
We got some science happening. So for making the color bolder, with this particular medium, these colors are quite light in general. But what I recommend for at least getting the most out of the color richness is letting the layer that you're working on dry and then adding more color on top of it once it's completely dry or even like mostly dry. And your idea to add heat actually does work. There are quite a lot of artists who just have a blow dryer for that purposes. And so you could just go over it with a blow dryer if you really want it to go faster. Okay. That works too.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's any interesting shows I'm watching right now. Let's see, I think in our last craft night, I was finishing Babylon 5, which I've now finished. I started the newest part of the show Disenchantment on Netflix, which I originally got into because I'm a big Futurama fan. And so I thought, well, let's see what the fantasy version of this might look like. And it's pretty good so far. I'm still just a big fan of Futurama, so nothing's quite beating it out in that realm. I've also found myself getting back into some anime more recently, just because the style of storytelling is a bit different than some of the shows that have been coming out recently. And so I find the difference in perspective in how narrative is presented to be I don't know if inspirational is the right word or more so just invigorating to be considering a different sort of narrative structure. So I really enjoy that. Yeah. If anybody has any anime recommendations, especially if they're on Netflix, that would be very welcome. Let's see. Oh, and my roommates and I planted some bulb flowers before winter started back in the fall. And apparently when my partner was getting back from campus and teaching today, he said that they were starting to peek up out of the ground. So at least my flowers think spring is coming. So we're getting somewhere. I don't know if anybody else gets weird food cravings where they don't entirely know what it is they're craving, but I've had that for like the last 3 weeks now. Like I kind of know what I want and everything that I eat is fine, but there's like a specific flavor I'm looking for and I have no idea what it is. And it's so hard to explore for new foods right now. So I'm just trying to do the best I can to like watch cooking videos and see if I can figure out what it is I'm looking for based on how they describe the flavors. Like never before now have I been so thrilled to have somebody describe food to me, Before I was like, oh, this is torture. Just give me the food. Now I'm like, no, no, please. I need you to describe this to me in great detail so that I can determine if this is something I need to put effort into finding for myself. And I'm still trying to figure it out. It might be a hot beverage that I'm looking for, but I'm really not sure. I thought it was a chai latte with a shot of espresso, but then I got one the other day and it was not that. It was good, but that's not what I was looking for. But I think I was on to something with that flavor. And then 2-3 weeks ago when the craving started, I thought it was chestnuts. So I picked up some chestnuts that were already prepared, and that was also good. It turns out chestnuts go great in a tuna salad sandwich if you like tuna sandwiches. Fantastic. Chestnuts and tuna go really well together. I did not know that. That also was not the flavor I was looking for, but also very good. Also, I don't know if anybody's like in between the spot where like they thought maybe I'll wait until after this I'll eat dinner, and now they're really hungry because I'm describing food to them. So I'm sorry if I am making you very hungry by describing food.
Could you actually describe what chai latte tastes like? I've never had one, but like everyone talks about it, but then I'm so afraid that it's gonna taste like, I don't know, something crazy. Cause it doesn't, you know, sound familiar. Could you actually describe it? That'd be great.
Yeah. So let's see, at least this particular one that I had recently was not particularly good, but I'll describe some of the better ones that I've had. So the better ones that I've had, they've got like, there's some different spices that I don't readily recognize, but a really foregrounded flavor of a good chai latte would have cardamom in it. Commonly there'll be cinnamon involved, which is a really nice flavor. And usually cinnamon is one of those flavors that completely takes over a dish, but somehow it balances out really nicely. And it's not just entirely liquid cinnamon. So you've got the cardamom, you've got cinnamon. It's almost kind of like a spice cookie kind of flavor, but not as sweet. And it is based with a black tea. Just kind of a common sort of, I think here in the States, we would make it with sort of like a English style black tea, like a breakfast tea. And so it's got that kind of bitterness to it, but I think the addition of cardamom with cinnamon takes away some of that like quality that dries out your mouth, like you've just eaten a spoonful of peanut butter and your tongue is stuck to the roof of your mouth kind of thing, or like some kind of nut butter that's gumming you up. At least I find that this cardamom kind of smooths that out for me. And then with the latte aspect, and there's other spices that I don't readily recognize. And so if anybody else knows them, please let us know. But also common for the latte aspect of it. So a latte is commonly made with a hot frothy milk. And what that entails is, you know, frothing it up and then pouring it in with the tea to give it a sort of creamy flavor. So you've almost got like a really common sort of British tea with various spices. And then if you wanted to make it a more coffee base or a more caffeinated base, some coffee shops will call it a dirty chai latte. And the dirty element of it is a certain number of shots of espresso just dumped into it. I usually only go with one because I want to actually sleep at some point that day. But depending on how well you handle caffeine, that can vary. That's what I've noticed with it, is it's kind of nice round flavor. It's a little bit different than like your typical black coffee, which will be a bit more on the bitter side. I don't know if that description really helped. Good. Yeah. I guess the flavor that I really liked from that particular experience is the cardamom, which I guess comes out with how many times I mentioned it. But I really do like cardamom flavors. And what I like the most about the use of cardamom is that you can use it in both sweet and savory dishes. And at least in American cuisine, there is a really distinct line between what things get to be sweet and what things get to be savory, which I never really noticed until I started exploring other culinary traditions and other sort of ways that folks think about flavor. And I think I prefer cardamom on kind of the more savory side. And I think that comes out in a chai tea latte, because, which is also redundant, because if I recall correctly, chai also just means tea.
For you, knowing that, I'm proud of you.
Well,
not so many people know these details.
I've had this explained to me a few times, and I was like, oh, right, those are the same.
What did you have cardamom in that was savory dish?
I think it was like a sauce or something that I had. It was kind of similar to a curry. I don't know where I encountered it, though.
Okay.
So often I find I eat food that people give me and I ask very little details. I get to the point where I'm like, all right, does this have pork in it? No. Okay, cool. I'll eat it. And like, that's the extent of questions that I usually ask when people just present me with food.
A lot of people even don't know what cardamom is. So that when you just said like there's cardamom in chai, it was like, I'm listening.
The first time I encountered it was from a friend of mine. Her dad was from Pakistan. And the way that he made tea is he took, I think it was Tetley's British black tea. And I think he used like the breakfast blend of it. Mm-hmm. And he took that and then he just hand crushed cardamom, brewed that, and then poured milk into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the greatest cup of tea I had ever had. It was so phenomenal. That was my first encounter with cardamom. It was wonderful. What kinds of experiences do you have with encountering cardamom in food?
So I'm from Iran. So we use that in a lot of things. And like, it's mostly like pastry and tea. So I actually have never had cardamom in something that is not going to be sweet because of its strong flavor. But we also believe that it has like a warm nature. So if you have like, you know, like kids have like just upset stomach, they don't know why, just have pain, so you just give them a little bit like cardamom and hot water and just like calms them down and like makes it like that warm, nice feeling in your stomach.
Interesting. I guess something similar I've seen parents here in the States do, and my mom's done, is you do like some hot water with a bit of lemon juice and honey in it.
Yeah,
and it's just really calming on the stomach.
And chai, that's exactly what we call tea in Persian. So like the first time that in the United States I saw like was saying chai tea, I was like, what? What is that? Why are you emphasizing on tea so much?
Tea. Yeah.
Well, I stopped talking and let you talk because I was actually enjoying so much listening to you. So another thing is like, you know, a type of fish is called mahi-mahi.
Yeah.
So mahi is Persian for fish.
Oh, really?
So what we're saying here is fish. So you said like saying mahi-mahi fish is actually three times fish.
Interesting. And does that refer to the same variety of fish that we usually think of as mahi-mahi as like a specific fish? Or is it
mahi just kind of fish? Like,
right.
It's just the word for fish, like how chai is the word for tea.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now I see how my question would be redundant there. That makes sense. Because whenever I think of mahi-mahi, I'm thinking of like one really specific tropical fish.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
fish to me.
Oh, that's neat. That reminds me of years ago. So I don't know a lot of Spanish, but my partner in his high school, half of his classes every day were taught in Spanish. And so he learned a lot of it growing up. And I was telling him, I was like, oh man, this was another one of my food cravings. And I was like, oh, I'm really hankering mole sauce. And I did not know this until he told me, but mole also means sauce. And it's actually a word that's common in Spanish that's derived from, I don't remember which group it comes from, but from a Native American tribe. That was, it's a similar word. And so mole just means sauce. And so it's just sauce. I wonder what that kind of like idea in language is even called. Because I'm sure there has to be somebody who studies that. And like they would have some sort of term for those kinds of words. And I wouldn't even know what to look up, because it'd be really neat to have like a list of those kinds of words, where like in one culture, they, it would primarily be in the United States, because we're very guilty of doing that, where we just have redundancies in that way. But to think about that, I wonder what that term is. I'll have to bug some of the folks I know in the English department about that and see if they know what it is. Or if we have anybody from the English department or language studies on the call, maybe they'll know. Okay. Also, okay. So to get back to art, because this is an art event and not just my podcast on food. So far what I've done is I've broken my rule about not using pencil on things that I'm going to send through the mail. And that's one of the beauties of learning rules about things is breaking them. And I'm just drawing trees. I'm from the Pacific Northwest, and here in Indiana, there's not a lot of trees. And I haven't been back home in a really long time. So I've been feeling some trees lately. So I'm just drawing some trees. The nice thing about particularly the trees, well, thank you. The nice thing about the trees that I'm used to is that they're basically just exaggerated triangles, which makes them really easy to draw just a whole bunch of them, as they're just very scribbly looking triangles, which is what I like about them. Actually, one of my favorite things about art is that while there's a lot of really complex, really gorgeous sort of realism that folks do, like I'm sure you've maybe come across either like a maybe it's made its way to TikTok. I don't know. I don't use TikTok. But like on YouTube, it's come up, or like Instagram, I think it's come, it was a trend for a while. People drawing these just like photorealistic portraits of people with pencil or pen. And it was just absolutely gorgeous work. The other end of art that I don't think gets enough attention is where you're drawing just impressions of things, and you still get the idea across with just a nice sketch, like a bunch of lines in a general triangular shape, and you get yourself a really nice evergreen tree. And I think that that's something that folks often overlook, and it's an example that I like to use whenever I'm teaching and I'm trying to explain like different ways of communication for my students. Is I'm like, you see, I could take this symbol and I could show it to a bunch of people in the Pacific Northwest and they would think, ah, that is a tree. Or depending on how weirdly I've drawn it or how big I've drawn it, they might think, oh, that's a mountain. But if I show it to like my friend from Arizona, she might not readily think of tree. She might now, because she's hung out with me for 2 years and has heard me talk endlessly about trees from the Pacific Northwest, but she might not as readily think of this image as a tree. That's kind of fun. That's something I like to think a lot about whenever I'm thinking about like things in research, or if I'm feeling really stressed out, is how can what I'm looking at, or how can what's really bothering me and my environment around me be connected to something else? I'm not somebody who's avidly great about meditating regularly, but this was a thing that's been recommended to me recently. Speaking of mental health awareness, going to therapy is a normal thing, and I'm going to normalize it until, well, forever. And so my therapist was recommending trying out meditation. And she specifically got me into this thought of meditation that's almost basically just like very relaxing podcasts with fantastic music in the background. And the most recent theme that she's had me listening to are meditations on the idea of impermanence. And it's just been really fantastic to listen to think, whatever's stressing me out right now, whatever I'm feeling, whether it's good or bad or neutral or anything else, is impermanent. And that's something that's tangible and intangible about it, and something that's worth celebrating is knowing that no matter what it is, it will leave and new things will come in. Same with non-light fast art. I'm going to enjoy this painting for as long as I can until I send it to my mom, and she'll enjoy it for as long as she can until, I don't know, maybe one day it fades away because I didn't send it to her with light fast watercolor. But even if I had sent it to her with light fast watercolor, there's a chance that her cat might chew on it. And that's not very permanent if a cat's going to chew on it, to be honest. Her cat's kind of destructive. But also she's like, I think 3 years old, so she's working on it. Yeah. That's been my recent sort of, I guess, extracurricular sort of thought processing has been on this idea of impermanence as something that can be relaxing and not terrifying. I kind of like it. It's been kind of nice. Could also be that I've spent too much time hanging out with the philosophy department. I'm not sure. They also talk a lot about things that are impermanent. But it's enjoyable. Oh, all right. So here's some interesting techniques that I think I could communicate well with this painting. And, you know, feel free to look if you want. We're also recording this and can make it accessible if you want to reflect on it later. So I've drawn these little trees, but you'll notice in the background here, as I said, I really like doing the full sort of wash and then just adding and blending colors as they move. And I've added in this sort of layer back here of purple. And what that does is, and I'm trying to build it up with the pencil, is it's going to give the impression of more depth to my trees because I've added some darkness behind it. And that helps sort of set it apart from my more kind of soft kind of greeny sky color. So that's another interesting technique that you can use whenever you're working with these kinds of colors. I was on a short walk today and I had, you know, if you think about like, if you're somebody who really enjoys teaching, you may have these kind of like weird teaching ideas where you think, what if my class was structured like this? How would that work? And I was thinking, what if I had an entire class that for the class period, we listened to an audiobook while painting in the first half of the class, And then we discussed and reflected upon it while sharing our art in the last half of the class. And I wonder how that would change the discussion element and what my students pay attention to. If I just in class put them in the position to try out what lots of people who like to make up blogs about study techniques suggest, which is finding some way to listen to what you're studying in audio form while doodling or doing just some loose sketching or whatever, something just with your hands, even knitting is a good option for that, that I've seen some folks suggest. If I just had that in the classroom, I could see it being frustrating for some students, but I wonder how many of them would get into it. I also don't know what class that I would propose to make that work, and I have no idea how I would convince a department head to let me do that. Or if I would even have to tell them that part of it, if I could just propose the class, but then just not tell them that part of it. That seems like a thing that I would try out after I've built up enough, like, credibility. I don't know. I just thought about it while I was on a walk today. And I was like, that would be pretty interesting. Because it's something that I do on my own time, is I'll listen to audiobooks of the stuff that I'm doing in class. Just whatever we're reading, if I can find an audiobook for it, then I'll listen to it. And then I'll be like doodling or painting, or I'll be on a walk, or just doing some, you know, mindless tidying around my house, like in my bedroom, folding my laundry. And that just seems like it's really nice. And it's been a really different experience in engaging with the material from my classes. And there's also a good chance that some of the reason they can get away with doing that is that it's a grad seminar, which is a really different experience than your undergrad class, which is a lot more heavy and getting through more concrete, specific concepts and less of an exploration of manipulation of concept. I don't know. It could be fun, though. Could also just drive my students nuts. I don't know which. Ooh, another good flavor I checked out recently in my quest to figure out what flavor it is I'm actually craving were figs. I picked up some golden figs at the grocery store. Absolutely fabulous. It's been forever since I've had figs. And I forget how much I love them. And then I don't buy them for a while because I think, I mean, figs are great, but are they really that great? And then I buy figs and I'm like, why don't I always have figs? Because they're fantastic. And then I remember how much figs cost. And I'm like, oh, that's why I don't always have figs. And also, digestive-wise, figs are pretty similar to prunes, and I don't always need that in my life. Or do I? I don't know. Digestion's hard. But figs are a really nice flavor, too. It's weird when I think about all of the things that I've recently purchased in my quest to figure out what it is the flavor that I'm desiring is, because I feel like they're all very different. Like, you have a fairly kind of meaty flavor of the chestnut. You've got the nice sort of sweetness and grainy texture of the fig. And then you have a chai latte that's very cardamom heavy flavors. I also had the shot of espresso, so it has a kind of coffee flavor to it. Maybe there's some average of those flavors that I just don't know about. I don't know. I hadn't really reflected on that until right now. Usually I don't have an audience of people who are listening to me talk about food. Maybe I should have that more often in my life. Next Mental Health Awareness Week, it's just an hour and a half of Naomi talking about food.
We could like even send out food to everyone and then you like taste each one and you're like, you know.
Yes. We have it be like a tasting experience where we all practice describing food so that I have a better way to describe a chai latte than just it tastes a bit like cardamom and cinnamon.
Maybe you can make it an astronomic course, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that would be fun. Don't we have like a food science department here?
Yeah, they do wine, but you should, you know.
Well, I don't want to send everybody wine on a Tuesday. That seems a bit much. But
for your mental health. I'm just kidding.
I have a feeling Caps would have a conversation with us. But it would be fun. I don't know. I guess what other foods would be a fun tasting experience? Because oftentimes whenever you think of like food tastings, it's wines and beers and cheeses. And I feel like those are all hard things to give to people if you don't 100% know what they like. Like I always get nervous if I'm bringing like a bottle of wine over to someone's house. And I'm like, oh man, what if they hate this wine? I guess we could do fruits. Fruits are fun. Ooh, we could partner with the with like a local farmer. And we could be like, hey, donate some coffee. Now that's a thing that I would say we should probably do in the morning or on a Friday night so that it doesn't matter if I stay up late playing Zelda afterwards. That would be fun. Yeah, coffee tasting. I like that idea. A coffee tasting, but also like, I really like the idea of like a fruit tasting because there's a lot of really nice regional fruits and veggies that I still don't know what to do with them. Like what's up with kohlrabi? Has anybody figured out what's up with kohlrabi? I keep trying and I still can't figure it out. It kind of tastes like broccoli, but it's also just this giant gnarly ball. And everybody's like, just cook it like broccoli. And I'm like, but it doesn't cook the same. I don't understand. And I feel like I'm just missing something with it. There's some potential there. Teaching people how to, ooh, and then it could be transitioned into a painting where we, like a paint night, where we also just paint the food that we're eating. So still life. These are abstract impressions of this kohlrabi that somebody gave me to eat. I don't know what to do with it, so my painting is confused. The title of my painting would be, "What is this? I don't understand this object." That idea kind of reminds me of, I haven't come across it. I guess, well, we have it, the Taste of Tippecanoe over the summer. Well, we haven't recently, but normally we do. And then like in Seattle, you've got the Taste or Bite of Seattle, I think is what the event is called. And you just get all of these great sort of regional local restaurants and food crafts places that make really interesting, like, or especially smoked salmon. That's a great place to find just a bunch of smoked salmon of so many varieties. And everybody's like, my smoked salmon's the best. And I'm like, prove it. It's because that guy, the other person down there said that his was the best and he had a really good smoked salmon. Show me what you got. And that's how you just get a bunch of really fantastic samples of amazing smoked salmon. And they're all great. And I wonder if there'd be like some way, I guess you can't, it'd be really cool if there's a way to do that during like our current circumstances, because that's something that I've really missed with, you know, the way things have been, is just the lack of exploring food. Don't get to really do that. At least not right now. I don't know. Bye, Patrick. Well, as always with these craft nights, the time absolutely flies by. I always manage to be amazed how I managed to talk this much, even after almost now 28 years of being able to talk this much. But it's almost 9 p.m. It's been great getting to spend time with everybody. I'm, you know,